This English version of the podcast was created using AI-based voice synthesis from the original German recording.
Business Shift.
Business Shift.
The podcast for decision makers and executives who want to deal with the topic of sustainability in a sustainable way.
I'm Tobias Kirchhoff, your host from TÜV Rheinland. Today we are talking about a topic that affects us all: packaging. Whether milk, juices, or soups, we encounter beverage cartons everywhere, but how sustainable are they? Tetra Pak is a world leader in this field and is often caught between product protection, the circular economy, and the recyclability of its own products. How can packaging become more sustainable without jeopardizing the protection of food? How can recycling rates be improved? And how is the industry reacting to the growing pressure from environmental associations and regulatory authorities? I am very pleased to welcome Caroline Babenderode, Head of Sustainability for Tetra Pak's DACH region, today. Caroline, welcome.
Thank you very much, Tobias.
It's great to have you here and that we get first-hand information from you. And I talk about we all the time because, of course, I'm not alone here, but I'm here in the studio together with our sustainability expert from TÜV Rheinland People and Business Assurance, Dr. Bahar Schadkrause. Welcome, Bahar.
Hello, Tobias, and hello, Caroline.
It's nice to have you here.
Yes, I'm happy to. Thank you for the invitation.
Caroline, Tetra Pak packaging. What is special about Tetra Pak packaging?
The special thing about beverage cartons is first and foremost that they are very lightweight. The main ingredient is a cardboard box, as the name suggests. But to make the products durable at all, or to ensure that they remain in this packaging for a long time, we naturally need other components. On the one hand, we have a thin plastic film that is applied to the cardboard so that the cardboard does not come into contact with moisture from the outside and thus dissolve. Then we have another plastic layer on the inside on which the barrier is then applied, which protects the product from light and oxygen. As I said, in our case, it is an aluminum barrier, but we are also working on alternatives. We can talk about it later. Then there are two other layers of plastic so that the actual bottled product, i.e. the milk, the juice, so that they don't come into contact with the aluminum foil at all. This is for so-called aseptic packaging, i.e. durable products that can be kept for up to 1 year without refrigeration. On the other hand, we also have the so-called fresh milk packaging, or the packaging that is distributed in the cold chain. There we really have a less complex structure. We have the carton, we have the outer plastic layer, just like with the aseptic carton. We have the plastic layer on the inside, and then this cardboard is already finished, so to speak. Approximately 80% of a 1 liter carton is cardboard for non-durable, i.e. refrigerated products, and between 70 and 75% cardboard for aseptic products. Plus then the plastic layer, 20% for the fresh products, a little less for the aseptic ones. For this, 4 to 5% aluminum foil is added. This is the structure, and then accordingly, either with a plastic closure or without, that's actually the whole topic.
Totally exciting. I didn't even know that it is so complex. So you have high tech in this packaging, and so we are already in the middle of the topic. So when we think about sustainability or the environment, it's always about how we can use resources in a way that conserves resources and how we can cause less waste. And of course, the packaging that is around a product is no longer needed and then becomes garbage afterwards. You've been with Tetra Pak for 20 years. How has this topic developed for you?
For about 30 or even more than 30 years, i.e. almost at the same time as the introduction of the Green Dot, in anticipation of the introduction of the packaging ordinance, which was the first packaging ordinance at the time, it has already been specified that all packaging must be collected and then also sent for material recycling. And with that, the whole thing actually took its course. We had no experience at all. How can such a beverage carton actually be recycled now? And my colleagues at the time, who were still predecessors, really went to paper factories because they said that the largest component was actually cardboard. So it's actually logical we go to a paper factory and test with them and see how it works. Accordingly, the whole thing developed from there. Nowadays, it is actually completely normal. And I hope every consumer naturally throws his or her beverage carton into the yellow bag or yellow bin after use, because this is the only way it can be recycled. And the beverage cartons are sorted out as a separate fraction. So not as plastic packaging in any form, because there is a plastic coating on the outside, or as any other form of cardboard packaging, but it is a separate fraction. And these sorted and baled cartons actually go to specialized paper mills. And there they are dissolved. And I always think that's so great. That's such a nice example. You can actually try it out at home in the washing machine. You chop the cardboard a little bit, throw it into your washing machine, add a little water, the washing machine turns, and that's exactly the principle in the big paper mills. You have a large pulping drum, the beverage carton comes in, the fiber swells up through the water and through the rotation, and then goes through holes in the drum wall. It really goes out of this drum and onto the paper machine. And this is how new paper products are already being created. But for a long time, and you also asked about the development, Tobias, how has it changed over the last few years or decades? For a long time, the remaining components, i.e. the plastic, the aluminum foil, the lids, were then brought to the cement industry, which was also a recognized and absolutely also from an ecological point of view, a good way. But of course, the products were then no longer available for other products, so to speak. So the only thing that went into the cement was the aluminum foil as a substitute for bauxite. Today, we are actually ready and we have built the first plant here in Germany. In 2015, the first product idea, or the first idea in general, was how to build something like this, that we also process these components, i.e. polyethylene foil, aluminum foil, and the caps, so that we can recycle them in such a way that they can be returned to the respective industries. And that was with the company Palarek in Cologne-Hürth in Germany. That was really the first entry into the material processing also of these non-fiber components. And this journey is now picking up incredibly high speed because we will certainly talk about this later, because we are, of course, also anticipating the regulatory requirements that are coming there, both from the EU and then in Germany, and we must ensure that all components are then recovered to the highest possible degree for new products. When you talk about packaging, you also know as a consumer that it has to go into the yellow bin in the best case, but there is always the myth hovering over everything that's possible. Everything will be burned anyway. And that's why I found it super exciting.
Thank you very much for the explanations to simply show that something is really happening and a lot is developing in the area of disposal. So just breaking down such a multi-layer packaging, as it's called, into its individual components is a huge process. And using these materials as a resource again is also required by regulation on the one hand, but on the other hand, you as a company also have the pressure to use recycled material again, because we also have the requirement to use recycled materials under the packaging ordinance. And I'd be interested to know how that works. You are in the food sector for the most part, or 100%. There, you also have different hygiene standards, but do you need all these layers? It's all plastic. Is it all necessary? Now we have already learned that it has to be sterile, it has to be durable. But we also have the issue of hygiene, which means that recycled materials often carry the risk that you may not be able to fully understand what it actually was before. Does it even have a food standard? How do you deal with the topic? Do you have problems getting materials, and do you perhaps already have solutions? I would be totally interested in that.
I think that's exactly the important point, because often you think, well, it shouldn't be a problem at all to restore exactly the same thing from the original material. And there you address a very sensitive and also important point. We are in a contact-sensitive area, and of course, no one wants any impurity to migrate into the valuable food. So for us, of course, the top priority for primary packaging is that the food is protected. At the end of the day, we do the environment a disservice if the packaging doesn't work as it should, and we generate a lot more food waste at the end of the day, for example. In addition, there is also the health protection of consumers, of course. So that's the first priority, and that's exactly where we come to an important dimension, of course, because you don't just get prescribed about the regulation, but also because many people say that it has to go straight back into the packaging. But that's exactly where the devil is in the details. And you mentioned exactly that, that we have to make sure that, for example, we have the greatest possible purity of our packaging alone through collection. But it has not yet been approved at all that polyethylene from a mechanical recycling process can be reused in contact-sensitive products. So that's not allowed by the European authority either. We know this from PET, but PET has completely different properties than PE. PE, i.e. in polyethylene, is like a sponge and also likes to absorb foreign substances. With PET, it's a different matter. That's why we've known this bottle-to-bottle recycling from the PET bottle industry for so long. It's currently the case with us. We actually already use recyclates, but they come from a so-called chemical recycling process. So in the end, the plastic that comes back from our packaging is cracked open, I'll say brutally, and is then more or less identical to an original plastic so that it doesn't pose any problems at all when it comes into contact with the food. But now we have a topic here. The chemical recycling processes have not yet received recognition, so also legal recognition. This means that the focus is now on the further development of mechanical recycling processes. And we also have to develop in parallel in such a way that we naturally see, also in our discussions with politicians, that the chemical recycling processes are recognized, but not that they are then only the only processes, which is also the great concern of the politicians, but that we, of course, of At the same time, our recyclers, who process the polyethylene and the aluminum, that they will also be able to produce food-grade qualities again in the future. It's a long journey, and unfortunately, it doesn't happen overnight. But in addition, we at Tetra Pak also have our own experts in-house, so they are really absolutely recycling experts and also plastics experts. Together with our development department, we are now pushing this journey forward swiftly.
You already said that you talk to politicians. You also have to talk to the recyclers. You talk to innovative companies that may have new methods. How do you make sure that this works? Because I imagine that would be very, very difficult. So now on the one hand, you have politics that dictates things, but on the other hand, you have very practical issues that may not be implemented so quickly, but at the same time, you have to meet regulatory requirements. How do you deal with that?
So, first of all, it's important that we have been looking into the future for a relatively long time and already understand where regulation is heading. One thing, of course, is our own ambitions. And it's also about the fact that a long time ago, we thought about what of our materials we could use again as recyclate at some point in the future. Is it the fiber? Is it the aluminum foil? Is it really the plastic? So these discussions also take place internally. But one must really understand, and it is also embedded in our function, that we anticipate very far ahead. And that has nothing to do with looking into a crystal ball, but really understanding and having felt where the market is developing, where certain players are developing, and of course, accordingly, where the regulation is developing. And now we are exactly where you said. The European Packaging Regulation, the so-called PBBR, has now been adopted. It will be published soon, and it will actually be sharp from 2030, where 10% recycled use is specified for us alone, for our packaging. And of course, that's not long away. You think that's still 5 years? 5 years is actually nothing for developments, especially in the food sector. And of course, our employees in the research and development area in our large laboratories are now, of course, really working or are being trained to ensure that these things really move forward quickly in cooperation with the European authorities, with the regulatory authorities. We have to deliver. As I said, it's absolutely not an issue about chemical recycling. We can, but this also requires the recognition that these processes are then also possible and that this can be used as recyclate is recognized.
You just mentioned it, the next 5 years. I would like to go back to the surface a bit from the depths. I think our listeners are also interested. You as head of sustainability, you are responsible for the probably for the strategy, keyword, circular economy, etc. What are your overarching goals in the area of sustainability for the next 5 years?
So for us, the focus is indeed currently or for several years now, especially in our area, on the circular economy, because we have really seen that this is now one of the most important points that also ensures our survival to some extent, if you will. That concerns, yes, and you already said it, Baha, it doesn't just concern us, it doesn't just concern beverage cartons, but ultimately really all packaging that you ever find on the market, in the European market. And that's why the big focus is on it right now. And I'm less strategic than really very operational. So I really do a lot with our recyclers, accompany their production, their development. I do end market development, which means where can the materials, since they cannot yet be reused in packaging, where can they be used? So we are now talking about reusable plastic pallets, for example, will also be a big topic in the PPBR. In other words, the reusability of all kinds of things that concern logistics, crates, but we also talk about master badges. It is really day in and day out this work. Which market would still be potentially viable in the application? So that's in our area. At the sustainability level, of course, we have different areas globally, of course. We have different pillars. One pillar is climate and nature, where, of course, everything is going or at full speed towards our net zero targets for 2030 in our own production and then across our entire value chain by 2050. We have a separate social sustainability department in preparation for all the reporting standards of the EU, IEE, keyword CSRD, CSRDDD. Of course, these are huge topics, i.e. above all, to understand social sustainability across the value chain and also to ensure that it is made transparent. We are now talking a lot about transparency for the future. We also clearly have an area called corporate affairs, i.e. where the whole topic is really talks with politicians, commonly called lobby work. We call it advocacy, where it's really about talking, discussing facts. Often, of course, the politicians are not so involved in the issues, but then decide on certain topics. In this respect, it is also important to talk to them. And then we have another area that is also a little more focused on internal development, i.e. sustainability excellence, i.e. the further development of the knowledge of all our employees in our company worldwide. We have over 23,000 employees, and it's really about improving knowledge also for the front lines, i.e. the salespeople, the marketing people, so that they all really have a good knowledge of sustainability. The whole thing is just our way forward in the field of sustainability. And our focus now, especially in sustainability operations, is currently the circular economy.
What are the current steps that you are currently taking, or what is coming up soon? So you just described that you want to have net zero emissions in 2030 and one step further in 2050. What are the current projects you are working on?
So less so for me, actually, but we are actually looking globally across the entire value chain, of course, to see where the largest emissions are generated and where they can be minimized. We started publishing our first climate protection target back in 2005, and that actually focused on our own production areas, and that was really hands-on. So where can we save electricity? Quite simply, where can we switch to green electricity? Is green electricity available at all? And we implemented that relatively quickly in Germany. In the meantime, we have really come a long way worldwide. I mean, we are already at over 80% renewable energies worldwide. That's one point. Then what you do as a private person? Really look, where can I control the lighting depending on daylight? Where can I install photovoltaic systems? So all those things. That's one area. And the other is really what is created through our equipment. So we are not only a manufacturer of packaging material, but we are actually a very large mechanical engineering company. So we also manufacture the equipment through which the milk gets into the packaging in the first place, the filling lines. We manufacture equipment for UHT heating, pasteurization, homogenization. We manufacture huge equipment for the production of ice cream. So if you eat a Magnum ice cream, you can be sure it's produced on a Tetra Pak line.
I didn't know that at all.
Yes, you hardly know that. But that's our plant engineering. Cheese, a lot of mozzarella has been produced on Tetra Pak lines. And that, of course, is such a very big, important area. What is actually created by the customers, the bottlers, the packaging industries? So be it dairies, fruit juice manufacturers, what kind of emissions are caused by our equipment alone? And that's where the focus is. Because that's where we really see, in addition to raw materials, that the largest emissions are actually generated in the production plants due to very electricity and energy intensive plants. And of course, it is now important to tackle this and really see how we can optimize it.
That's where the biggest lever is, especially if they are your own investments. Let's talk once again about the topic of the circular economy. That's your topic. Circular economy? We talk about it more often also in our podcast episodes, but also with many colleagues. And for me, it would be interesting to hear again what you mean by circular economy. Or rather, I always like to call it circular economy also in German, because in German, the wording Kreislaufwirtschaft is very often only associated with the topic of waste. I say this a bit critically, only with the topic of waste. But the circular economy is actually much, much more. You have just given a little insight. You are very, very much on the road to develop with a lot of interest groups. Maybe there is also the keyword design for recycling and things like that. What do you think the circular economy is?
On the one hand, it actually includes the raw materials used. And I think we all, everyone who is involved in product production at all, has to come up with a product idea, whether it's packaging or a chair or a car. I think it's important that we start from the end. So now we don't have to start from scratch. And of course, you will never stop developing any fancy products and everything that is still chic. And there may also be a bit of a conflict with marketing. There are certainly always different positions. But I think it's important that we really think from the end and think about what if this product is no longer functional, is no longer needed? What can we make of it? And from today's perspective, which materials fit into a circular reuse? Also, in which products can it potentially be reused? And I think we need this understanding. We really need a good knowledge of materials, a good understanding of materials about the products used. And can they perhaps be put together differently? So as I said, with the beverage carton, you always imagine it to be so complicated, but really try it out at home, either in the food processor or in the washing machine. Because nothing is glued or nailed in any form, I'll say it stupidly, stapled. It's all just laminated. That's why they separate from each other without any problems. And I think these are exactly those things. So on the one hand, the materials used, very important. Then the way this product is really composed. So can you really separate the individual components well from each other? I think that's blatantly important. And always think about what life is like afterwards. So of course, we want to go into high quality recycling. We want to go back into high quality products. Although I just resist when people say, oh, that's downcycling. I think it's important that despite everything, we find substances somewhere in production or in another function. And if it is the 300th park bench, then it is the 300th park bench before these plastics are perhaps contained somewhere or sent somewhere else. I think that's important. We have to think differently and we just can't do it. And I had explained that earlier. Unfortunately, we are not yet managing to make them become what they used to be, especially with contact-sensitive materials or products. So I think we have to rethink a bit there. And then there is always the economic side. That's why it's called economy. So I think it is, of course, also important that this is in an important and, above all, reasonable economic view. It can't work any other way. So you can't suddenly expect only gold or platinum standards. We simply have to assess and see the market conditions really well. And not everyone can really afford only the high-end products, but we really have to look at what is accessible to everyone, what is actually presentable for everyone. And that's where we have to get there. So I think we have to rethink everyone in product development, in the product idea, in a completely new way. And you have already said design for recycling. I would even go one step further. In other words, design for recyclability, i.e. that it is recyclable in the first place. And the next thing is also design for recycled products, i.e. We actually design an original product, but we are already thinking about the next product. I think that's actually quite important and also pretty cool.
We'll get back to the products in a moment, but we were now on the products. We were at the production, and you also addressed a topic earlier, social responsibility. We want to touch on that again now. You have about 25,000 employees, and of course you also have suppliers for what you do. Keyword supply chain, how are you on the road?
We are actually in preparation also to the reporting obligations mentioned above. I'll put it this way. Thank God we have a comparatively manageable one, so I don't want to downplay it now, but we have a comparatively manageable supply chain compared to perhaps two large textile companies. So I think one or the other has to deal with completely different issues again. But nevertheless, it is, of course, an important topic because we are on the road worldwide. We are also represented with our packaging in over 160 countries. Where do the raw materials come from? Where does the wood come from? How is the wood grown in the first place? How is the tree felled? Under what conditions? That's why the topic of FSC certification, which covers all three dimensions of sustainability, was very important to us. We use the plastics, but we also use plastics that originally consist of sugarcane or whose raw material is sugarcane, which we also use. So what happens on the sugarcane plantations? How are people remunerated? What are the working conditions like? Also, what about seasonal workers, with the people who are not even a permanent member of our staff? And we have to understand this across the entire value chain and make it really transparent. So there we are right now, actually, in the whole lineup. What is needed? Where do we have to look? What have we already established? This is a huge topic, an important topic. At the same time, however, I would also like to criticize all these reporting obligations. So dealing with this topic is blatantly important because in many industries, we really have quite catastrophic social conditions, which many people may not even be aware of or you are not interested in. So I think it's important that this is depicted. The other thing, however, is that we are now, of course, creating huge reporting monsters, all of which then also have to be validated. And I really ask myself, all the effort behind it may still be possible for us to a certain extent. But for smaller companies, medium-sized ones, I see this as much more difficult. And then I think, does it really bring the effect you want to see? So instead of spending so much time on reporting, I would rather wish to see that the people, the companies are on their way, that they have understood the topic. Of course, we should also report on it, but I believe that we need to streamline it much more overall, make it much more practicable, not so complex, not so bloated. And that's why we keep criticizing the German Supply Chain and Due Diligence Act. What a wonderful word, isn't it?
Well, I'll take that with me as a wish for politicians to simplify things. But I would be interested again, CSR or social responsibility. One is reporting obligations. The other question for me is, what specific projects do you have where you say, we take a certain responsibility for our employees and or the supply chain to ensure that we maintain a level beyond reporting obligations?
Absolutely. And that's really essential, Tobias. So first of all, of course, you always have to map and understand first. So what does it all involve? Who is part of it so that a beverage carton is ultimately on the shelf in the trade? So what and who is responsible and necessary for this in the first place via the, let's say now, the upstream supply chain? And that's so far, I'll say, understood in principle, or you know that, but now it's really time to get down to the details. So now it really means that we have to look at the forest together with our suppliers. So in concrete terms, what happens there? How do they really organize it? And that it is no longer enough to just have a certificate presented, to put it bluntly, but that you really look on site. We have been doing this for a long time, also through Transparency International, that they have tried again and again to bring more transparency into the issues. The other thing is that you also mentioned the employees. So we have very clear guidelines worldwide when it comes to occupational safety, health, and of course, mental health. We have a lot of programs there. It's been established for a long time, and we always make sure that it really works. We have to do the training sessions regularly. So I think that's really important, and that's actually the focus of our commitment to people. We now simply go to the Asian area or the African area, where our packaging is also produced and sold. So for our factories, we have the same standards everywhere. That's one point. But the other is, where can we continue to support the communities? For example, we do a lot in the area of school milk programs, ensuring that we supply over 60 million children with milk or very nutritious food. This is more or less a program that has been established for decades that we have set up. The other thing is, how do we manage it? Because in very few countries, you really have regulation when it comes to the collection and recycling of used packaging. So how do we manage to get the people with us on site? They organize in such a way that beverage cartons are also collected in Brazil or in Malaysia, for example. In other words, that we also help organize it on site, but always taking into account a standard as far as the social aspects are concerned. In other words, that we organize them cooperatively. There was also a big report on National Geographic that we organize these street waste collectors, who you have certainly seen on trips, that you then organize them accordingly, give them a fixed income and bring them into a cooperative. So these topics, they have actually been taking place for a long time. In other words, long before CSRD or such discussions even existed.
I think that sounds totally exciting. And yes, that you are already very good at it, and also with a lot of actions.
There are clear goals, and we really have to bring the recycling industry forward massively now. We have to support them. I would really like to see a lot of commitment, and of course also from politicians, that they really understand that one of them is the goals that are being prescribed. But on the other hand, they have to help ensure that these industries survive now and that they stay on the market, and so that we are all able to deliver and also meet the targets.
Yes, you can hear that transparency is everything. You can also criticize a lot of all the reporting obligations that we have, but perhaps these, I'll say now, vehicles also promote transparency in the market, then hopefully at some point.
Hopefully, yes.
We have just briefly touched on the topic of communication. I think that's totally important, because it's precisely because of such, let's say, critical voices that companies encounter again and again, that I sense such a restraint in communication, that companies don't dare to talk about their sustainability activities because they may not be at the end of their rope yet, or because they are not yet finished, or because they are perhaps still very much in their beginning. I would be interested to know what you think about it, because I always try to motivate and say that it is better to communicate that you are doing something but you are still at the beginning, that you have not yet reached your goal, than not to communicate at all, because that also has an effect on the customers, to the consumers, to the partners, because otherwise it looks like you are doing nothing. How do you deal with that? And the second question would actually be, what would you recommend to our listeners on how to deal with the topic? So just go outside and take the people with you. We talk a lot about taking people along, about collaboration, about raising awareness, but we are sometimes very, very cautious for cultural reasons.
These are very important points. And if I go into the first part of your question, so I'm with you, it's better to report on what's going well, what's not going so well, or that you're on your way, than not talking at all. I think that's very difficult, or to go more in the direction of greenwashing. I mean, this is now being successively put a stop to, thank God. I think it has so much to do with trust. And when I look at consumers now, they ultimately want to be able to rely on the fact that what is claimed or what is communicated, when it is communicated, that it is really true, that it is authentic, that it is true, and that you can do that even if necessary, if you are interested, that you can learn more details. It really doesn't hurt anyone, or it doesn't really hurt to say, we still have a gap, we have a problem, and that's how I've always been on the road. So also, when I speak to the bottling industry, I have said, I will not only tell you what is possible, I will also tell you what is not possible, and then we will work together to make it possible. And I believe that is, at least from my perspective, the more correct way. At least that's the way I work. And we really have to get there. And then I think we will also create a much better understanding of why certain things are so complex, why they take so long, why a lot of things are simply not so easy. And I really see that as the task of NGOs and or of other quite critical stakeholders to clarify this. And the second part of your question was, so I think overall, it's probably the better way for everyone, or certainly the better way if you say, yes, we took a wrong turn somehow, was a mistake, we just have to sort ourselves out again. And I think that's the topic of error culture, and also admitting a bit, yes, it was an attempt, it just didn't work. I think that's better than working on something for years, always claiming to the outside world that everything is fine, everything works, and then trying somewhere to cheat it in. That's difficult, especially in the area of sustainability. I think it's important to start with the youngest children, that we don't just see that it's somehow a burden, something that is somehow totally complicated, that simply requires me to make sacrifices. It's just a lot of fun. So I think sustainability is such an exciting topic. We are surrounded by ecological issues, by social issues, and we have to take the youngest children with us, actually, who have a completely different approach anyway with their empathy, with their curiosity. And I believe that if we manage to do that, and that's where we come up with the topic education on the topic of communication. And for me, the topic of education is so blatantly important. We have to think completely differently so that we really see this sustainability as a good experience. We can also see that this has now become very unpopular with many. Of course, you are also worried about yourself, about your economic condition. That is also clear. It is certainly difficult. And if there is perhaps not enough money, even in the company, then of course you don't deal with sustainability at first. Although I always think that if you implement this well from the beginning, then you will ultimately save so much. And I believe that we will not be able to do so much, must also get back to the point where it is simply important, but that it is also enjoyable.
Yes, and sustainability can also be a driver of profitability and marketability. You say it, in 5 years, it will be your turn under the PPWR to meet certain requirements.
If you don't meet them, then certain packaging may not exist.
Exactly. And that alone, if you look purely from an economic point of view, is also an incentive, but I agree with you. Sustainability has moved a bit, how should I put it, into the second row right now in the current discussion, also at the political level. What I personally think it's a shame and not worth the whole topic, because I really think that, as you say, sustainability, there has to be a cultural change, and it starts with our children, but that goes all the way to the corporate structures. Sustainable leadership, continuing to live things, designing new products, looking at the end of a product from the very beginning. These are all things that help us to really still experience this earth, also for our children and for our grandchildren. And I think that's just important not to give up there, and also to take the first step, then just to do it.
Yes, or rather, Carolyn said it, do it. And we also say it at Business Shift, just do it or simply do it. And we have learned that the path is not easy. It is a long path, and we don't even know if there is an end to this path, because it will continue to develop and evolve. Unfortunately, we have already reached the end of our short conversation. Thank you very, very much, Carolyn, for being with us. So I learned a lot about packaging. Actually, sustainable packaging is like a Rubik's Cube, that tries to combine environmental compatibility with product protection. So it's really tricky, and the solution is unfortunately not done in 10 moves, but you can hear it. They are on their way. I find that very, very exciting. If we want to enter the circular economy, I think it's important to strike a balance between product protection and recyclability. But there is no magic solution. Well, and the next time I visit the supermarket, I'll take a closer look at such a box. So my impression is that there is more technology in it than in Apollo 11, and I will try it out with the washing machine. If it breaks, I'll get back to you, Carolyn. So in that respect, you can't get out of it. So thank you very much again, Carolyn, and thank you, Bahar, for joining us today, and that we gained such exciting insights about packaging. And to you out there, let Carolyn's enthusiasm infect you, exchange ideas, maybe even try it out with the washing machine. If that doesn't work, you can contact Tetra Pak. And maybe you'll try a few things, and maybe you'll soon find out for yourself that one or the other works very, very well. Get in touch with us if you can manage the packaging revolution, and then maybe we'll also get into conversation on our podcast. And who would have thought that cartons could provide so much to talk about for us? And again, a big thank you to everyone out there who was there. I hope we were able to inspire you, especially Carolyn, and I'm very, very sure of that.
If you want to learn more about sustainability in business, just stay tuned. Subscribe to our podcast, and we will bring you the most interesting tips and stories on the topic of sustainability in business, innovation, and transformation in a resource-efficient way directly into your ear canal. You can receive us wherever podcasts are available and wherever you are. In the home office, in the car, in the bathroom, while ironing, walking the dog, in nature, with a child, cone, or dog. And as always, you can find all the information under our show notes. And don't forget, change, even in business, always starts with ourselves. So until next time, your
Business Shift.
Business Shift.
The podcast for decision makers and executives who want to deal with the topic of sustainability in a sustainable way. Stay curious.
Bye-bye.